What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. We will be returning on January 3rd.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about as we come to you from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Today, we're going to be talking about our time at the Iowa Hawkeye Area Labor Council Steak Fry. And this is one of those events that I've always wanted to come to something like this, because you know, you think about Iowa, you think about the caucuses, you think about all the participation, you know, democracy being participatory, people being involved, active, engaged, you know, having a beer with the candidates. This is what it's supposed to be. And today we spent a good bit of time rubbing elbows with all of the local candidates who have came out to talk to people and give their little spiel. And also we had, you know, Liz Mathis, the wonderful woman who came out and is running for House here. Also Mike Franken, the guy running for Senate. He is a fabulous guy. You're going to hear his interview a little bit later. But, you know, the idea that you're surrounded by these people and these candidates who have ideas and thoughts and the direction we should be heading. What we didn't talk about, what there was no talk about whatsoever, is the things that divide us. Everybody that I spoke with, and you'll hear some of those interviews and also the podcast, we're going to throw out some additional ones down the road. It was all the same kind of, hey, how do we make people's lives better? It's the stuff we talk about here on this program all the time. From your local county supervisor to the guy running for U.S. Senate, it was all, how do we do things that make working people's lives better? And I want to thank Junior and the good folks here at IBEW Local 405 for opening up your hall to us and sharing this incredible event. You know, there had to be a couple, 150, 200 people who showed up to this event and got access to these candidates. This is what it's supposed to be. Not getting the 30-second interviews on the F channel or whatever propaganda network is out there, but actually sitting down and talking about real issues. And when people got together, when they get together and talk about real issues, you know what they do talk about? Like I said, talk about how they're going to make their lives better. And for me, we're in this moment. I keep coming back to this. We need to be investing heavily in infrastructure, and we've started that. We're down the path. The $1.2 trillion that the Democrats and Joe Biden have moved forward on is a good start. You drive here through the state of Iowa, it's got some rough roads. It's got some rough infrastructure. There's an incredible opportunity for investment. And oh, by the way, please, Iowa, when the money comes around for, and I'm talking to the Republican governor, when the money comes around to invest in broadband across your state, your rural areas are in really bad shape. And this is, again, talking about how it's not about rural or urban. It's not about the cities versus the suburbs or the farmland. This is about getting access for everybody. And when we were in these you know, isolated places, there's nothing. There is no internet access whatsoever. And you talk to people, and it's much like where I live. I pay an extraordinarily high price to get the internet that we get, and it's not bad. But the amount that we have to pay to get something that right now is a necessity is outrageous. Which is why I'm thrilled to see that this investment is going to happen and is happening. Now, the other part of this is the $1.2 trillion, it's not enough. It was never enough. And we were saying this back when it passed. You know, it's a good start. It sounds like a lot of money. But when you put the American Society of Civil Engineers report up against it that says right now, today, we need about $4.8 trillion, that $1.2 trillion is just about a quarter. It's a quarter of what we need. And you go across the states that we've gone to so far on our Working Class Heroes radio tour, and we keep coming back to, man, there's a lot of things that need to be upgraded. Boy, there's a lot of investments that could be made. There are a lot of opportunities to create jobs, to leave something positive behind. And this is the story that we're getting from people. Again, it's not the divisive stuff. It's not the stuff you're going to hear on the F channel. It's not the stuff that the right wing keeps saying, oh, that's Democrats only care about this, that, or the other thing. They care about jobs. They care about infrastructure. They care about a better future for their kids. And education, overwhelmingly, education at the forefront of people's minds. Because look, we've just gone through an election cycle not too long ago where the moneyed interests are doing everything in their power to destroy our public education system. And here in Iowa, and you're going to hear this from people while we're here, they're trying to do all of the horrible things that we've seen in other states. You know, the voucher schemes, the privatization schemes, the underfunding. And the thing is you talk to people here and they go, look what happened to Kansas. We're following the Kansas model. We're going down this path of starving our public schools, which everybody I talk to, the pride that Iowa was in, always in the very top tier of education and education spending in this country, the fact that in Iowa, they said, look, we got the best public education system in the entire country. And I think one guy wanted to fight me over it. But here's the thing. They got a governor. They got a Republican-controlled legislature. They've got the Republicans who are doing everything they can do to starve that. And it's what happened in my state of Pennsylvania years ago. Pennsylvania is now at the bottom of education spending. And there's a guy running for governor there who wants to take him even further down to the bottom. Did we learn nothing from Kansas? And the voucher schemes? And this is why I have such great hope for Iowa. You know, the people that we were talking about get it. The folks that we've had conversations with, they get it. These privatization schemes, these voucher schemes are just another way to make the wealthy wealthier. And they're putting up a fight. And that is great. So, you know, when we were at the steak fry, and who doesn't love a good steak fry? I mean, and these weren't, you know, you think about steak fries, you know, a little tiny. These were monster. I guess it is Iowa after all. These were monster steaks. And just as you would imagine, they got a big open pit in the back and they're just firing stuff up. It was an incredible event. Everyone should experience this. In fact, in every state, we should start these. There should be these in every state to bring people together and to bring candidates together and, you know, roll up the sleeves and do the hard work. But, you know, I go back to this idea that, again, what we're told our divisions are what define us. But when we're doing this trip, as we're talking to people and we're having events and we're walking picket lines and we're doing that stuff, everyone keeps talking about the same things. It's about the jobs. It's about education. It's about infrastructure. It's about the kitchen table stuff. It's about making lives better. But here in Iowa, anyway, as we've been talking to people, all of the bad ideas, all of the attacks, all of the right-wingery, all of the privatization schemes, and of course, front and center, you know, Iowa is a no-rights-at-work state already. They've been a no-rights-at-work state for years, and they're going even further, attacking unemployment insurance, attacking workers' compensation. Everything that they can do to make things worse for working people. And I go back to my frame. My original frame still sticks to this day. Republicans hate working people. It comes out in their policies. It comes out in what they're bringing to us every day. The stuff that they ram through like thieves in the night. For instance, this is one of those examples. There are a lot of shoulder injuries from the workers who work in the packing plants. The meat packers and the folks who, there are a lot of those jobs still here. Shoulder injuries are something that happen quite often because it's a repetitive use thing. It's something that, you know, by doing the job, you're going to have these injuries. So what have they done? They've gone and made it much harder to collect workers' compensation for shoulder injuries. They've basically carved that out and said, yeah, we know that's the nature of the work. Not making the work better, not changing the ergonomics, not getting OSHA in there to fix things. No. It's all about saving these big companies money. And what's, I guess, encouraging is people see it. People are active around it, engaged around it, angry around it, and ready and willing to do something about it. And as we've been traveling around and having these events and talking to people, it's that action. It's that wanting to take action and make things better. This sense of pride that our community was the best and we can make it the best place again, that keeps coming out again and again and again, even though our Republican friends and corporate America keep trying to do everything they can think of to, well, make that not so. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to share some thoughts from the Steak Fry. I'm going to sit down with Liz Mathis. She's running for U.S. House here in Iowa's 2nd Congressional District and got a really good shot of being the next congresswoman from this area. So we're going to take a quick break right back after this. Remember, if you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you get yours, you'll find ours, from Stitcher to Podbean and everywhere in between. Quick break right back after this.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show. We will be returning on January 3rd. Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rick Smith Show, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at thericksmithshow.com. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1945. That was the day that Paul Robeson received the Spingarn Medal from the NAACP. The award was given annually to the African-American with the highest achievement. Robeson certainly fit that criteria. He was born in Princeton, New Jersey. He attended Rutgers University, where he was an athletic standout and valedictorian. He earned his law degree from Columbia. He was a successful singer, as well as stage and film actor. He was also an internationally recognized star, with singing engagements all around the world. Robeson strongly supported labor and working people. He was also an outspoken critic of U.S. colonialism. His stand for social justice made him a target of Senator Joe McCarthy during the hysteria of the Cold War Red Scare. Because of his alleged communist ties, in 1950, Robeson's passport was revoked. It took him 8 years to get it reissued. During that time, he could not travel abroad to perform. The International Union of Mine, Mill, and Smelter Workers invited Robeson to sing at their Canadian convention in 1952. Since he could not travel, he sang over the telephone. The union then organized a concert on the Washington State Canadian border. Standing on a flatbed truck parked on the U.S. side of the border, Robeson gave a 45-minute performance to a crowd of 40,000 people. He started the concert by saying, quote, "I stand here today under great stress because I dare, as do you, all of you, to fight for peace and stand for a decent life for all men, women, and children. Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
What does he care if the world's got troubles? What does he care if the land ain't free?
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
This is the best of the Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to Cedar Rapids, Iowa, here on the Working Class Radio Tour. One of the things I love about doing these events is you get to run into people who are doing good things and hopefully going to change the dynamics of our politics. And that's why I've asked Liz Mathis to come sit down with us. Liz is running for Congress here in Iowa's 2nd Congressional District, I believe.
Yes, they switched it. It used to be 1, now it's 2.
So, you know, I appreciate you taking some time for me. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Glad to be here.
So what's the issue? Well, you know, what do we do to change the dynamics in this country? We seem so polarized. We bought the red hat, the blue hat. What do we do to pull the country back together?
I think we find candidates that are a good fit for the district. So I grew up on a farm. You know, my parents were World War II vets. They came home, you know, after World War II, and my mom had been in the cadet corps. You know, she was a nurse, and so she became the town doctor's nurse, and my dad started farming. And so they were leaders in the community, school board members. My dad was on the County Conservation Commission and the first no-till farmer in 1972 in Clinton County. So, you know, he started some innovation way back then. But I worked really hard. I worked hard on the farm. I, you know, hayed the cattle. I fed the cattle. We had a farrowing operation. I pulled pigs out of sows because I had the smallest hand. And then, you know, I drove a 4020 John Deere tractor made by union employees in Moline. And then detasseled corn. A couple of my crews were kids from the juvenile detention center, and somebody said, wow, that really helped you with your future in the Iowa State Senate, you know, to try to keep them from, you know, fighting most of the time during the lunch hour. So, yeah, I went on to the University of Iowa to study journalism, and I met my husband, and we got married and had 2 beautiful kids, and I had a great career in journalism for about 27 years. So I worked for KWWL-TV and KCRG-TV, both television stations within this very district. So I got to interview thousands of people, and because we have the Iowa caucuses, I was able to interview every presidential hopeful from Reagan to Obama, and covered tons of weather disasters and healthcare stories. And
so you've seen humanity up front.
I've seen humanity.
So the question then becomes, you know, how do we, you know, look, the country is red hat, blue hat. You know, we've bought teams.
Yeah.
I say labor is the place where we bring the country back together. It's the economy, stupid. All the fringe stuff, all of the attacks, all of the election deniers, of which your opponent seems to be as crazy as the next one. Mm-hmm. I think people want politicians who are going to address their needs, healthcare, education,
yes,
jobs. That's where the heart needs to be.
Yeah, it really does. After journalism, I worked for a mental health care center for kids, and then I ran for the Iowa State Senate. So the Republicans upended collective bargaining, and I really saw how unions came together and reacted to threatening forces and how they have climbed back from that in the state of Iowa. They create the best communities. We have a group here at the IBEW, the hall that we're talking in, who after the 2008 floods, they helped to get retired electricians their licenses back to rewire thousands of homes. We called it Old Farts Electric. And the IBEW supplied money to them, and they were able to do that. So not only are, you know, our unions, hardworking people, they do quality work, but they're embedded in their communities. And they care about, Rick, you're right, they care about health care. They care about their kids. You know, they care about what's happening in their community just like everybody else does. But their focus is to make sure people are making a great living and they're able to live a good life.
Yeah.
That's it.
Because I keep coming back to this. The Republicans and the right keeps throwing all this divisive stuff at us. Things meant to pit us against each other.
Sure.
While they're robbing us blind. And, you know, as a working person, I have watched, you know, deindustrialization happen. I've watched the destruction of people's ability to join and form unions and to collectively bargain for better wages, hours, and conditions. And this is where I think Trump was the blind squirrel that found a nut. People are angry. People are hurting and suffering. And I look at my family. My family's basically the basket of deplorables. They were all racist. They were all misogynistic. They're all homophobic. They were always those things. We can justify one way or another, but that never made them vote. What made them vote was he was going to bring those jobs back. He was going to bring those union jobs back where they were able to support their families and have that American dream that we were sold. So this is where I want to take something positive out of what Trump has done. A lot of destruction in this country because of him. But the one thing I think he was right about is people want those jobs back. Mm-hmm. People want that dignity. And they don't want the factory jobs back or the steel mill jobs back. They want the union jobs back. They want what those union jobs afforded them, a decent lifestyle, a decent health care. That's what they want back.
But, Rick, Democrats have never wavered from that. They have wanted that all of these years. And then a shyster comes along, and he decides he's going to take the message back. He's going to say that he's the champion of the working person. And Democrats have always been the champions for workers. And let's look at the PRO Act. My opponent voted against the PRO Act.
Well, your opponent has voted against everything, if I'm not mistaken.
She's voted against everything.
The Recovery Act, Inflation Reduction Act, the Infrastructure Bill. Yep. She's voted against all of this.
But has
she taken any credit for it like the rest of the Republican Party?
Yes, she has. She took credit for it a couple of weeks later, and she said she found there was money for a lock and dam system, and she took full credit for the lock and dam system, which the Carpenters Union said, what are you doing? You know, we're working on the locks and dams. You know, so the problem with this is we have a lot of, including my opponent, a lot of Republicans saying they're for the working person, and they don't attend a strike. I mean, John Deere struck here, right? Yeah. And so we were on the line with John Deere. We've been on the line with the workers at Ingredient. We've made sure that we're there, and we let them know we have their backs, and that's the way it is. Now, you know, somebody can come in and do razzle-dazzle and say, oh, we protect workers. You know, I fight for workers. No, you don't. If you did, you would have voted for the PRO Act.
Absolutely. You listen to the Rick Smith Show with Liz Mathis. She's a U.S. House candidate here in Iowa's 2nd Congressional District. LizMathis.com, the website, if you want to check that out. I got to ask you about, you know, abortion is a big issue right now. I have a lot of my female listener saying it's not November, it's Rovember. What do you see coming? And what's your position?
Yeah, I'm the candidate. I'm the pro-choice candidate. I don't believe government should be in our bedrooms. I don't believe that Ashley Hinson, my opponent, should be deciding, you know, the reproductive rights for the people of our district or for people all across the United States. She has co-sponsored a bill that would outlaw abortion for the entire, states, the United States. And she, with no exceptions to the life of the mother or rape or for incest, she is not the pro-choice candidate. I'm the pro-choice candidate. I care about women. She didn't vote for access to contraceptives either. So I want to go to Washington, codify Roe, and make sure that women make their own choices for their health care.
Now, it's interesting you brought up contraception because I've been saying for over a decade now that Roe is not the ultimate end game. It's Griswold. It's that kind of control. And look, I've got two daughters. I'm very concerned about their future. And, you know, while I am not personally in favor of abortion, I'm never going to have one, clearly. But it's not the government's choice, and it should never be a bunch of old white guys' choices. It shouldn't be.
Well, what do you think if I say with one stroke of the pen, the Supreme Court took your daughters from first-class citizens to second-class citizens, not able to make their own health care choices?
No, I'm right there, and I want to make sure that they have that opportunity. So last question I've got for you. Obviously, campaign coming down to the last days. What's the message? What do we want people to know?
The message is we are concerned about the costs to families across the United States. Democrats want to bring those costs down, and they're starting to do that in a number of ways. So you've seen them, you know, pass a lot of, policy around health care. You've seen them pass the infrastructure bill that will create jobs and good wages. We want to make sure we secure Medicare and Social Security. We've seen the Republicans say that they're going to sunset it, and they're you know, talking behind closed doors about it. No way. And we want to protect women's reproductive rights. Those are the issues.
Do you buy that they were only kidding? I've had Republican listeners say they didn't really mean it.
Oh my gosh, Rick.
They didn't really mean it. They didn't mean it, Liz.
No, they
really mean it.
They do.
And your opponent voted against the insulin bill.
She did.
Which, again, is another one of those things that is really telling to me.
And against Inflation Reduction Act. She called the infrastructure bill socialistic spending spree. Yeah.
Yeah, and then took credit for it.
Nice alliteration.
Seems very, very, very well Republican. But Liz, I appreciate you taking time for it. I wish you the best. Once you're in Congress, we want you to come back and talk with us again and help move this country forward. Thanks so much.
I'd love to. Thank you.
Liz Mathis, congressional candidate here in Iowa. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. We'll get links out on social media how you can check out the program. Also, check out her website, LizMathis.com. We'll get links out back after this. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
This is the best of The Rick Smith. This is the best of The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we spend a little time here at the Hawkeye Area Labor Council Steak Fry, I love these things because you get to see all the candidates come through, and I'm fortunate enough to sit here with Admiral Mike Franken, who is running for Senate here in Iowa, taking some shots, taking some arrows, but hopefully our next senator from the great state of Iowa. Mike, thanks for taking time for us.
Very pleased, Rick. And those aren't so much arrows as they are broadsides, but that's okay.
Yeah, no, you're taking some hits. Too liberal, I guess, one out of touch, another because you want people to have health care, you want people to have good jobs. That too liberal, too?
Well, I mean, also, it's got a pretty long list. I'm at one hand, I'm a warmonger, and then the next one, I'm overly a peacenickish. So, and then also, I've been gone for a long time for the state of Iowa, so of course, I'm no longer an Iowan. So they add a lot of those things to me. But, you know, when I signed up for the United States Navy and was gone for 40 years doing that, no one said I couldn't come back. And I'm happy to be back in the place where ultimately I'll be buried.
There you go. Now, we saw down in Georgia, you know, a lot of attacks on military people as they're trying to steal their right to vote. We're in a moment where democracy is really under attack, something people like you and our military fought for.
Yeah, you know, the basic oath, which I have given 11 times, I believe, and I think Chuck Grassley's given it something thereabouts, and it says, you know, you solemnly swear that you will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. So in my life, much of that was overseas, but an element of it domestically as well. But nothing looms as important as post-January 6, where 139 House members on the Republican ticket all believe that your vote really ought not count, in essence. And the very basic element of democracy is the right to vote, a representative vote. So it's very odd that this is the case that we're talking today. But what we're seeing is an element, a swirling darkness of America come to the forefront, and I believe it's time for significant leaders, serious leaders with serious solutions to step up and do their country's business.
Yeah, I look at someone like Chuck Grassley, who has been in the Senate for, well, a lot of years. I would have thought he would have had more courage in the moment that was January 6th and all of the election denial that's come out of this.
Well, he should speak to himself on this matter, but I think the two very important elements in anybody in elected office ought to be empathy. You ought to care for your fellow humankind. And the basic adage that my mother used to drone into us is care for those you've never met as much as those you know. And secondly, the most undersubscribed sensibility, professional sensibility, is leadership. And as you say, he has been AWOL, absent without leave on leadership, always takes the back seat. Even the photographs of January 6th, where he's in the background, standing against the wall, fiddling with his phone, You should be part of the solution. You have more history there than anybody. You should be part of the decision matrix. You should be involved in getting it done. And then rooting out the cause and holding those who are to account to account. And he has, again, before, during, and after, been AWOL.
How important is January 6th in this campaign? How important is his role in this and some of the statements that he made there around?
Well, it's a sliding scale. He has a covey of supporters who are absolutely nonplussed by this issue. Does not interest them. They believe it's just a bunch of patriots that are having a rambunctious
day. Was it a regular day in our Capitol?
No, I'm thinking not. I've never seen such a thing, and I was apoplectic. I couldn't believe it. I've seen this in other countries, up close, but never in the world standard bearer of democracy, and in our throne of government. And shame on us as a nation, and shame on those who perpetrated this.
January 6th, a lot of the people who were there were former veterans, military people.
Yeah.
Are we concerned about the state of our military? And as someone who spent 40 years?
The military is pulled from society, the whole cross-section. So you have all the goods and the bads and the likes and the dislikes associated with it. Certainly, there were an inordinate number of military people who should know better. And they had no business. They should have had that realization, and I would expect the United States military will hold everyone to a highest account. But they above everyone should know this.
Yeah, I hope that happens. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Admiral Mike Franken, Iowa Senate candidate. You can check out his website, frankenforiowa.com. We'll get links out on social media how you can do that. Now, too liberal for Iowa, but the things you talk about, good jobs, reshoring manufacturing, investing in our country, that doesn't seem too liberal to me.
Listen, that's just, here's the situation in the state. They have a senator who's been in office for 63 years, and a very low percentage of Iowans thought he ought to run again. And there he's at 99% name recognition. He has to get above that number. And the only way he can do it, because everybody knows his record, is by denigrating that person he's against. So they're grasping. And anything that's considered a strength of mine suddenly becomes a fallible thing. And it's just kind of the plan they do. I mean, it's an age-old situation. So too liberal. Listen, Iowa is the state that educated George Washington Carver. It's the state that said women should go to law school, or that women can be in grad school with men, or that was 85 years ahead of Brown versus Board of Education. It was the third state that said, listen, as long as you love the person, you marry who you want. We are a state, we had a state that had really aggressive agricultural conservation techniques in the 60s and 70s, ahead of most of the country. This is Iowa. It's not that we're progressive. We are just forward-leaning. We want the best of everybody, and we want to get along with everybody. And let's not mistake forward progress with backsliding into their concept of 1950.
Yeah, our original intent, friends, I like to talk about the original intent of the Constitution, and I always say that it's putting women back in the kitchen, blacks back in the field, and gays back in the closet. Sadly, at least that's what it seems like to me, this kind of anger and hatred, instead of moving us in a direction that we need to be, which is forward. We need to be reshoring manufacturing for national security purposes and for our economy. We need to be investing heavily in our infrastructure, and we're on that path. I think we're heading in the right direction.
Well, I think you for some of my, I've got six sisters and a wife and a daughter, et cetera. I think the other thing you might want to add is, where do they want to put these abortions? In the back room? Hiding? Unsanitary situations? Unhealthy situations? This isn't their business. This is a woman's business. And
so are you pro-choice?
I'm for a woman's choice. Absolutely. And as a man, I am poorly equipped to tell a woman what to do. And I just wouldn't do that. Absolutely. And I think in the heart of every woman out there, she's absolutely indignant that she's being treated differently on a different plane than the guy in her life.
No, I worry about my daughters. I've got two daughters. I worry that they're going to be second class citizens at the mercy of some guy, which is, you know, where my mother's generation had to fight from. So the stories that I heard from my mother, I don't want for my daughters.
Well, in those very dire situations, I'm not looking to have a constitutional lawyer, Chuck Grassley, Mitch McConnell, in the delivery room telling me yay or nay what that doctor was going to do for that mother. We need a grip. The Republican Party is using this as a cudgel to club and develop money from the evangelical right, and it's just terrible in the country because it's such a gut splitting and personal thing, and they're weaponizing this against women.
So how do we pull the country back together? Because we're in a moment where, depending on which hat you're wearing, red hat, blue hat, which T-shirt you bought, that's what's dividing us. How do we pull that back together?
Well, I've got a history of being apolitical in the military. This is how we work. There are no questions of alliances, et cetera. Just, you know, the country and doing the mission at hand. So and when we retire from the military, we go about our way. But I believe we've got that brother and sisterhood that we all remember those days. And I'm a farm kid from Iowa. I'm a rural roots. We got along with everybody in the neighborhood. There was a time when we didn't have a problem. But here's the big thing. You know, if you look at January of 2002, this country was entirely together. We had witnessed an attack on the nation, and the Democrats, Republicans were completely coalesced. And although we didn't necessarily step out on the right foot and do the right thing right off the bat, we were together. Now, the leadership that exists, Democrat, Republican today, are the same people that were in a leadership position or thereabouts back then. So we were together and they led us astray. And the media is part of that. The media is part of this. And the manner in which media outlets have been purchased and minimized people's external influences, and the demise of good radio, demise of small town newspapers have all played a role in this. And maybe we need new leadership across the board. It's time for a new era. Come together as a nation, because there's far more that combines us than separates us.
I say the same thing, and I think right here in this hall, you know, labor is the way forward. If we can pull people back together in the workplace, we can fight for better wages, hours, conditions, opportunities for families. You know, maybe that revived that American dream thing that I grew up believing in.
Yeah, when I was 18, the world was open to me. I was working in a slaughterhouse. I was working for my dad as a welder. I was a math tutor. I had all sorts of activities. And I considered, my gosh, working in this slaughterhouse, this is good money. I enjoy this. I'm tired when I leave work and do my 60-hour work week. And I was making money. I bought a house when I was 24 years old. You could do that with wages back then.
Today, with union wages back then.
Today, you know, unions were that rising tide that lifted all ships. All wages. Now today, I'm driving to Carroll, Iowa, stop at a Stop and Shop, and a woman's working behind the counter. I say, "How much do you make?" She says, $9.50. My heart broke. I said, "Do you have a benefits package?" She goes, "No." I said, "Do you get 40 hours in?" "Yes, and plus one day on the week." And so she didn't have a ring on her finger. So I figured, A, demographics as they are, she's probably a single parent. And she's, because of parents, because of kids, et cetera, because of ex, whatever it may be, she's trapped here in a way. So what's her future? When's the last time she's had a dental appointment, or when she's been on a vacation, or when's the last time she's bought something for herself? Her disposable income is damn near nil. This is not the way we live in Iowa. This isn't a life of dignity. There's no unions around that to lift up the wages, and consequently, she's in this dire situation. Too poor to do anything else, and too encumbered to move away. We need a different perspective in the state of Iowa.
Not just Iowa, the entire country, yeah. Because what you just talked about is replicated in state after state. And as we're doing this trip, as we're talking to workers across multiple states, it's the same thing. The last question I've got for you, Admiral, and you're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Admiral Mike Franken, his website, frankenforiowa.com. We'll get links out on social media. You know, you've got Rick Scott and his plan to sunset all federal programs, Social Security, Medicare being a big part of that. If that were to happen, we would talk about mass chaos for seniors and for people who are retired in this country. Thoughts on doing away with Social Security? What the kind of bankruptcy problems we would have, the kind of chaos that would bring?
How about hunger? How about sickness, disease? So here's a data point. My parents lost all their meager savings during the savings and loan debacle of the 80s. Now, you're too young to remember
this. No, I remember it.
But this was traumatizing. And after many, 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 many years later, they got 19 cents back on the dollar. But that broke my mom and dad's heart. And they ended up working in the machine shop together. My little mom, 125 pounds in coveralls, well into their 70s. Because they wouldn't take anything from the kids. We could have made them give them a life of Midas, but they didn't. They would not do it. Would not do it. But they relied on Social Security. Without that, they would have been destitute. Is this what we want? Is this America? Is this the America where you've got corporate income that is what, 30, 40 times the starting salary in corporations, where stock buybacks are more than the corporation put in for generating new business or for reconstructing their infrastructure? Are you kidding me? This is capitalism run amok. And somebody in the room's got to be the grown-up, it's got to be the referee, and that's government. And that's government's role to provide clean air, clean water, a safe food supply, a safe environment, education, apprentice training, a good job, a good security, and health care for perpetuity, from cradle to grave. That's the government's role, and that's what the future for Iowa should be, and we should stop the nonsense that pulls us apart.
Amen. If I lived in Iowa, most certainly you would have my vote. The website, frankenforiowa.com. Admiral, I appreciate you taking time for us. Best of luck once you're in the Senate. We'd like to have you come back and talk to us again.
I would love that. Thank you, Rick. Just so you know, we outraised Chuck Grassley, and our polls are tied.
And I'm really hopeful that Mr. Grassley is well on his way. Thanks so much. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, and we're going all the way back to 1648, more than 100 years before the American Revolution, an early trade organization was founded in the colony of Massachusetts. They called themselves the Company of Shoemakers. Shoemakers were considered skilled craftsmen, yet changes in how shoes were made threatened their craft. The shoemakers were particularly concerned about low-skilled workers driving down wages. They formed their guild in an effort to protect their trade. This has been the basis for much of the trade union movement. The guild members argued that they were stopping, quote, the damage which the country sustains by occasion of bad wear. They wanted to set a quality standard for their industry. To ensure that standard, they set up an apprentice system by which new workers could learn their craft under the instruction of an established shoemaker. Nearly four centuries later, we hear similar declarations from union electricians, carpenters, and plumbers. Recognizing and promoting the professionalism and the skill of their craft is an important function for trade unions. Yet there were some differences between that early shoemakers' guild and today's labor movement. One of the most notable was the names for official duties in the guild. Instead of president or secretary treasurer, the shoemakers of Boston included titles such as a searcher, a warden, and a beadle. Another difference is that the Massachusetts colony outlawed the guild from, quote, fixing prices so the guild could promote the quality of their work but could not organize for specific wages. The skilled shoemakers were some of the earliest workers to organize together. Today's labor movement continues to walk in their shoes.
These boots are made for walking.
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Franken for Iowa.com, the website. I got to tell you, Michael Franken, a very impressive candidate. Impressive guy, to be honest. You know, sitting talking with him, enlightening somebody you want in the Senate. And this is the thing that gets me. We're in a moment where Herschel Walker could actually be in the U.S. Senate, but a guy like Mike Franken might not be. I mean, there's in that some bit of injustice. And here to share some thoughts of our interview with Mike Franken, our good friend, the producer, the professor, Brett Pransky. Brett, thanks for being here.
Hey, always glad to be here.
So what did you think of Mike Franken? I mean, you know, we had a beer with him. We're, you know, just like one of that old, hey, he's a guy I'd like to have a beer with. He's a guy we had a beer with, and I liked having a beer with him.
No, I share your opinion about him. He is an impressive individual. Again, he's an admiral, and, just all together, just a really kind of impressive guy, carries himself, incredibly well. One thing that I noticed that really stuck with me, I kept thinking about over and over again as we were speaking to him, is that, you know, Iowa has kind of turned, you know, into a fairly red area, you know, statewide, although there are, you know, pockets of Democratic support throughout the state. But, you know, in the last couple election cycles, they've really taken a turn to the right. But one thing I noticed about Mike Franken is that while progressives might not be, all that popular in some of these spaces, progressive values certainly are, because he led with progressive values from the very beginning, and everything he said seemed to line up with what we're hearing from the folks all over Iowa.
So maybe we do that turning it around a little bit and just call them Iowa values, because, you know, the idea of feeding people, the idea of creating jobs, the idea of caring for communities and each other, something he talked about and honed in on. Look, I was trying to lead him in different directions, and he zeroed right back in. Look, you know, all that other stuff, it doesn't matter. It's about making lives better. And I like that about the guy. No nonsense whatsoever.
Yeah, I noticed that too. He spoke very directly in a world of talking points where we expect candidates to, you know, deliver on their message and, you know, and give us kind of those pre-cooked talking points. He really didn't. And, you know, very direct in everything he said. And again, just, you know, core Iowa values. I think it's a great way to put it.
No, because I started with it. I said, you know, the knock against you is you're too liberal. You're out of touch. You're all these things, which is what the right always does. And he's like, you know, I'm an Iowan, man. This is what our values are and what they were and what we need to get back to. And, you know, talking about his childhood, talking about growing up here and the hard work, the work ethic that this guy has. And I think that's important to talk about, the fact that, you know, these are folks who believe, they believe in hard work.
Yeah, they really do. One thing I really liked about the Admiral's, you know, approach was that he not only talked about the things that he valued, he also ran us through the history of Iowa and all the different times that they had done things first and done things ahead of, you know, of other parts of the country, many things that we would consider to be very progressive, but he never really put that label on it.
Yeah, now you got Chuck Grassley, who's been in the Senate for literally ever. I think he's, what, going to be 95 years old or something like that? By the time this ends, could be the next Strom Thurmond, 100 years old, still in the Senate. I think you want to talk about out of touch. You want to talk about completely out of touch. Every jobs, the economy, education, all things that Grassley seems to be, when he speaks, on the wrong side of.
Yeah, he really does. And again, you... In the past several years, he's just aligned himself with, you know, with Trump and some of the worst things that administration has done through the years, and is still now, signaling that this is the approach that he's going to take should he be elected again.
No, you know, I really enjoyed our time at the Hawkeye Area Labor Federation steak fry. I wish we had these in. Do they have these in your neck of the woods? I mean, because nothing like this event. I mean, they had this giant big char pit out there with these massive chunks of steak. And again, all of the candidates from local county supervisor to, you know, all the people running for state house and state senate, all the way up to the guy who's running for senate and the woman who's running for governor, all in one space, all accessible to the people who took the time to show up. And it was open to everybody. It's one of those things that I think we need to be doing much, much more of.
Yeah, and one thing I really enjoyed about it is that lots of times at these events, if you go to see a candidate, especially if you go to see the top of the ticket, most of the time they come in, they say a few words, and then they have somewhere they have to be. And while I can respect that, and I understand that that's sometimes the way a campaign goes, the candidates who showed up to speak at this function, they sat there and they worked the room and they spent the entire time talking to constituents. They didn't hop on a bus and take off and go to the next place, although I know sometimes that, you know, that's necessary, needs to happen. But they stopped and spoke to everyone in the room. And I found that really impressive because you don't see a whole lot of that.
You think that's an Iowa thing? I mean, because, when you think of like the presidential caucuses and the things that happen here, this is the norm here. So is it, as outsiders, we're just like, wow, this is fabulous. We should be doing this. We should take this home with us.
Yeah, I really do. I think it's an Iowa thing. I think it's a retail politics thing. I think it's a grassroots thing. I think it's something that, the candidates in other areas could really learn a lot from is this, this ability to kind of stick around and talk to every voice in the room, because every person you touch, every person you spend that little time with, is very likely to go to the polls and vote for you.
Yeah. Now, in talking with Franken and some of the others, the thing they keep coming back to is the message machine on the right is so powerful and has polluted so many people's minds that even the things that are wildly popular that people, want and need and would be willing to fight for, they're not interested in. They want the divisive stuff, it seems.
Yeah, some do. I mean, I was pleasantly surprised by how many people were not immune to it, but were aware of it. They were aware that they are being divided. They were aware that these forces are out there, trying their hardest to make them not care about their neighbors, and they're resisting it. And it really was good to see.
Yeah, no, it was a great event and a great time here in Iowa. We're going to take a quick break. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back after this from Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
In America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
This is the best of the Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we're sitting here in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, again, remember, make sure you check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Find out where we've been, where we're going here on the Working Class Heroes Radio Tour. If you've missed any portion of the tour, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcasts, you'll find ours. And I'm sitting here at IBEW Hall, Local 405. And thank you to the good people who have invited us into their hall. I've enjoyed our time here. But I'm sitting here with Todd Taylor, Iowa State Senator, longtime state representative, and somebody who, I got to tell you, one of the people who made me laugh during the pre-interviews. So good stuff. Todd Taylor, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thanks for being here, Rick. Appreciate it.
So, the thing that I find interesting is when working class people, they get into elected office and the values that they bring, because too often, in my state, a lot of the people are not the working class type. You seem to me like a guy who's gotten his hands dirty a time or two.
Oh, sure. Well, I tell you, one of the things that helped kind of frame my getting involved in this running for office is obviously, my upbringing. Father was a missionary. Mother was a school teacher. So community service was really just a thing that we did. So community service kind of attracted me to AFSCME, the Public Employees Union, American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. And those are government employees, by and large, some private sector, that you can actually get involved in that union and change who your boss is, right? You can get involved in a county race and change who the county supervisor is, and, you work on the roads crew. That was attractive to me, community service, and then getting involved to change your outcome in your you know, your working conditions, wages, and, you know, at the job. Collective bargaining made sense to me. It's a give and take at the table. Neither side gets everything, but we sit down, and we had a public sector collective bargaining law in Iowa for 44 years, from the 70s to 2017. And our previous governor, before this governor that we have, never supported it, didn't vote for it when he was in the House in 1974. And in 2017, he got his bucket list, check that box, get rid of public sector collective bargaining by and large in Iowa, and then he became the ambassador to China under Donald Trump. Changing that law changed a whole lot of things for my union and my folks that I represent. You know, the paradigm of getting involved, changing who your boss is, that stayed, but the need to change it got pretty big. So that it guided me all the way through the years in the House and then right. And this last time in the Senate.
No, and the reality is, you know, unions make people's lives better. I saw it as a kid growing up in a housing project in Cleveland. When someone got a union job in our neighborhood, they had food at the end of the month. And you see that. They had, you know, the kids got a secondhand bike, better clothes, they bought a secondhand car, eventually moved out. So as a kid, you know, the message to me very early was union job, better life. And this is one of those messages that, again, that you're putting out there that I don't think we hear enough. What we hear from people is the attacks on labor, especially government workers. And in a huge way, I mean, since the Janus decision, you know, most of my friends who work for state governments, they have seen their wages go down, their benefits under attack, and their working conditions get worse. And I keep coming back to, when are we going to wake up and push back against this in a massive way?
Well, obviously, everything in electoral politics or even in winning or keeping a bargaining unit certification, it's strength in numbers. So, and then getting a better contract, strength in numbers. So if the opposition or management or the other team can decide that we want to cut our numbers down, that's how they get in and mess with us, I guess.
So let me ask you the other side of this, because what the argument that I get from my Republican friends who say the reason that they don't like organized labor is not because of the collective bargaining. They're all in favor of that. But because, well, it's a slush fund for those Democrats. And it's really more attack on the political process and the ability to change things and have a voice in the workplace and a voice in government that they're offended by. Not so much people joining unions, but it's the political side of it, the reason Republicans have gone this route, because there used to be, I'm old enough to remember, there being pro-labor Republicans who supported collective bargaining rights for public sector workers and private sector workers. It's now just, well, it's which hat you wore in the last election, you bought the red hat or the blue hat, seems to be where you're at in supporting unions.
I never liked that it had to be a Democrat-Republican thing. Because you can get off on different tangents. What we need to talk about in the unions were pocketbook issues, things that are going to affect you, you know, when you get your paycheck or if you have food at the end of the month, et cetera. In the public sector unions, we had different laws and different rules for disclosure of and keeping our books separate on the political side and the general education side. Educating our bargaining unit members comes out of this fund, and political comes out of that fund. So on the question of, oh, a lot of folks, Republicans would say, that's just a slush fund for Democrats. My union, AFSCME, would support anybody who supported these ideas of keep collective bargaining, you know, keep our ability to, you know, fight for a decent wage and good working conditions. Example would be that it doesn't matter if you're Democrat or Republican, if you're trying to get, I know what I'm trying to say. The oftentimes public sector folks, they have a little bit less wage, but a long-term benefits,
right?
A decent retirement, or you can go in the private sector and make a lot more money as a equipment operator, but you can work for a city or a state as equipment operator and, you know, you make a little bit less, but you have solid retirement. So that's good for everybody. Good
and job security.
Job security.
You know, all of that stuff.
Absolutely.
And there's a trade-off. And
that's right.
Understand that. But we seem to have people who want to take us back to the days of patronage. And this is my problem. One of the things Trump wants to do if he's reelected down the road is he wants to go back and make our government a patronage system, which I think is bad for taxpayers. It's bad for workers. And it's bad for citizens.
So I have to admit, I drive a lot back and forth to Capitol and so on, and I'm listening to this book on tape, Maggie Haberman, The Confidence Man. It just came out recently. It's about Donald Trump. One of the things that you just said sparked something that she said in her book, and it basically said he came out of the patronage system in New York, in the real estate and, you know, development business in New York. That's how, and he would be friends with Republicans, friends with Democrats, friends with the Democratic machine. But yep. Then that crumbled, and, you know, he took what he wanted from that and uses it in his own ways, which I, you know, can comment
on. One of the
on.
Things in 16 that he said yeah. that I agreed with, and he was right. He didn't lie about this one,
yeah.
is that he bought everybody on the stage. He paid, you know, he spread money around because this is what rich people do.
Yeah.
This is the reason that our political system is so broken and a huge reason why we need to get money out of politics. And I'm sure it's something that you've seen firsthand. You were a state representative for a couple of decades before you were a state senator. So I think you've probably seen this pendulum swing towards more money in politics, towards more control for lobby groups and the wealthy over this, especially in a state like Iowa.
Absolutely. Citizens United was a Supreme Court decision that really did change the world. And they were the unlimited corporate dollars. You can hide it through, you know, super PACs, and there's a fancier word for it, but it's basically dark money. Another good book by Jane Mayer.
There you go.
Anyway, I was on a stage once, and a bunch of citizens were asking me, what is the biggest issue in politics? What is the biggest issue confronting you? What's the biggest thing out there? And my answer was money. Reason is, money controls who's in power. Who's in power controls what bills get passed or not, right? So money is the bottom line. Now, we also have, of course, the First Amendment. So just because you worked really hard and have a lot of money, doesn't mean you can't have a law that says you can't spend it the way you want. It's free speech. But we should have reasonable limits in there to make sure that some voices aren't drowning out others. And we do have that. We have corporations drowning out voices of regular people because in Citizens United and the John Roberts Court makes it
Yeah, I can't imagine what that means in a state like Iowa, yeah. where, you know, this is a state that, you know, participation is always on display on the national level every 4 years because of your caucuses. And where money, if you were to interject this, you know, large sums of money into like a race like yours, you could swing that, couldn't you?
Absolutely. Money talks. And you know the rest of that phrase.
Yeah, yeah. Which is why, again, you know, Iowa used to be a strong Democratic, you know, strongly Democratic state, had a fabulous senator in Tom Harkin, someone I had interviewed a couple of times. I love the guy. And now you've got crazy senators. Now you've got, you know, people who I don't believe have working people's hopes and dreams and aspirations at heart.
No, I agree. Just that kind of makes me want to make this comment about our current U.S. Senate race. Chuck Grassley been in there for an awful long time. Back in the day, Chuck Grassley was kind of known for maybe challenging some inflated pension budgets or some whistleblower things, but not anymore, and that's unfortunate. Tom Harkin, on the other hand, he's retired, very close to him, but his legacy is the ADA. And just this week on my street over here on A Avenue, about 15, 20 blocks from here, I suppose, they did a curb cut. Took out the curb. So now there's an area that a person in a wheelchair or that has inability to walk up curbs can cross the street. Now, we didn't do it right after the ADA passed 25, 30 years ago. It's just last week. So it's still something that we're doing that was making the world better for people.
Right.
That's Tom Harkin. We don't see that in the current system, but that is kind of what you just said.
Yeah, you're listening to the Rick Smith Show with Senator, Iowa State Senator Todd Taylor.
Excuse me.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Iowa State Senator Todd Taylor. You want to check out his website, toddtaylorforstatesenate.com. We'll get links out on social media, how you can take a look at that. You brought up Tom Harkin, who I thought was a fabulous guy in the ADA. I remember the last time I talked to him, he talked about his brother and, you know, how his brother was able to get a job and how the union helped support this job and you know, how we made people's lives better. and, you know, people with disabilities, people with, you know, handicaps, that, you know, as a society, we were making people's lives better. Now it seems to me, Todd, that, you know, it's about the cruelty, you know, about, you know, hyping our divisions and pitting people against each other. And so, like, you know, I guess the question I have for you, in your time, have you seen that kind of cruelty get worse with the kind of people that are in the state Senate and in your state house?
Absolutely. I think the first example that comes to mind is a bill that we've seen for the last couple of years, but it just became law this year. And that was the unemployment compensation. You know, if you say it one way, it's like paying somebody who's out of work. They get money and they didn't even work. Or you can say it like it helps stabilize the community when someone, through no fault of their own, loses their job. And we had a system of unemployment that would pay 26 weeks. Well, the powers that be and the trifecta of the Republicans in the House, the Senate, and the governor this year in Iowa said, we're going to take that 26 weeks and knock it down to 10 weeks. Or knock it down by 10 weeks. And what's the point of that? Oh, it might save some employer contributions and it's good for business. Well, we also changed another little thing that we had in the 1930s. It's the preamble to Chapter 96. The preamble used to say, these are my words, it's so important that we keep you know, the community going when times of when people lose their job through no fault of their own. Obviously, if you're negligent, you know, and you lose your job, that's different. So we're not talking about that. We're talking about through no fault of your own, that this is such an important public good that we're going to have this system in place. And it's a complicated formula, but bottom line is you're going to get some money to help feed your kids and maybe pay for your car and pay it down here at you know, Bob's Garage so that you can get to work, look for work, and get other work. And so that's the system that we had. And we're seeing, and they've struck that language. That was an interpretation guide for judges. So judges would see any changes to the misconduct statute. Misconduct's misconduct. You kind of want to keep it defined in case law, so you kind of know it when you see it, but you don't want to put it in code. If this happens, then that. So you need to have it. And they went straight to the black and white. And they took that out. So the judges are hamstrung, but they don't have this interpretation guide anymore. So that's a little complicated about this Chapter 96 in the Iowa.
And that's your unemployment code.
That's right? The unemployment code, yeah.
So folks know. I always like, whenever we talk about unemployment or labor laws or Social Security or any of that, I like to refer to a good socialist president like Dwight David Eisenhower. He wrote a letter. This is a famous letter he wrote to his brother Edgar, who said, "You had any if anyone were to come out against unemployment, workers' compensation, the farm bill, you know, Social Security, they wouldn't be heard from in our political history. There are a few Texas oil millionaires and rich people in corporations who want to do these things, but their numbers are negligible, and they are stupid." And this is the good socialist president Dwight David Eisenhower writing this. And sadly, stupid seems to be running one of our major political parties.
Indeed. Also, as you said in the previous question, it's kind of making hate cool again. Doesn't matter who it is. And then hate sells. You know, it just wakes people up. The quiet part is being said out loud.
Yeah.
You know, and
that's the one thing I think Trump has done masterfully. He's allowed the racists and the homophobes and the misogynists and all those people to now feel emboldened, because now they're being politically incorrect and now they're speaking their freedom. And you go, no, you're just being a giant fill in the blanks.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's so frustrating, because, again, I think back to my parents and the desire that they instilled in me to serve the community. You know, and this is the area where I grew up. This is the hall that I had my very first election night at, and this is the neighborhood right here where this place is. And so these are my people, and I'm knocking on their doors, meeting them again. You know, people come back, and you get acquainted with them, and then you feel connected to them. And so you want to do good things for them, and you want to pass legislation that's going to help make their lives better. It's what we do. It is an essential function of government. Example, education. We should spend money on education that gets us the results that makes it better for everybody. And that's true for the union apprenticeships here. That's education. And also for keep college affordable. That's education. But the bottom line is we need to fund our public education to the degree that we get results of you come out of high school and you're ready to hit this economy and get a good job. That will translate to answering the question of how do we make a life better for people, I think. And I've also been on these panels where people say, well, I voted for 2%. I voted for 4% increase in education. Education in Iowa is the biggest line item. Okay, here's what we really need, though. I'd rather not argue about percentages of increases that we fight for. I want results. I want to spend whatever it takes to get us, every kid, ready for the economy. And if it's a kid that goes to the trades, great. If it's a kid to go to school, great. Inherits their family business, great. But they're ready for the economy. And that means aggressive, decent testing for reading in the 3rd, 5th, and the 8th grade. Why do I say that? I don't know. I'm not a reading instructor. I talk to reading instructors. They tell me that's what we need. Why? Because by the time a kid it gets behind in reading, by the 9th grade, it is very difficult to bring them back up to where they can be the productive, effective member of this economy after they graduate.
Yeah, and the studies all show that if you lose them by 3rd grade, it takes you almost never get them back. So 3rd grade is kind of that first benchmark of going, okay, are they on the right path? And then you may have to hurry up and remediate, but you hope you don't lose them that early. And the sad reality is by cutting funding to education, we're losing so many kids early.
Oh, absolutely. And there has been an increase in funding for education, but it's not keeping up with inflation. So it is effectively a decrease.
Right.
So one person can say, I voted for more money for education. That's why I want to talk about results. What happened? Where are we with the kids and their results? And you know what? I mean, this is true for everybody. Affected everybody. The pandemic didn't help matters much.
No.
Some kids didn't learn well remotely.
I wouldn't have.
Some people needed to be in the classroom. Some schools had hybrids. Every kid was different. And we're going to, and that's very personal in my world. But we're going to figure that out, and it's going to have a bearing on us in the future. But I want results. I want to spend money that gets us to these results.
There you go. Last question I've got for you. You got hope for the future? I mean,
you know, I do. I'm a glasses half full kind of guy, so I've got hope for the future. I don't think I can maybe function or live without hope. Hope is the key to the future. That's it right there. I think that people really want good things to happen to their community, and they will pick candidates. Like, how did Joe Biden win with 81 million votes? I think people said, I don't think we'd like this anymore. And I know it's tight, clear across the country. But that kind of same thing is going to happen as we go forward. I'm just glasses half full kind of guy. I'm hopeful.
I'm with you. Todd, I appreciate you taking some time for us, State Senator Todd Taylor. Check out his website, toddtaylorforstatesenate.com. We'll get links out on social media how you can do that. Great talking to you. You have to come back and talk to us down the road.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Good stuff, Todd Taylor. We're going to take a quick break back here from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
The Rick Smith Show. Where working people come to talk.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, talking with Todd Taylor, I got, again, a guy that, you know, I would love to have as my representative. And, you know, the people that we've talked to, you know, the kind of people that you want running for office, the kind of working class people that you need in these positions, the kind of people that you want to see, kind of people you want to see running for office. The reality is we need more people who are going to stand up, speak out, and, well, be willing to take the arrows. And as he said, look, you know, the reality and what we have seen in our politics, as Todd points out, has become much more divisive and not as much about getting things done. And these campaigns have gotten, you know, a lot uglier and a lot meaner and a lot more divisive. And I thought it was interesting. He was, you know, off air, he was telling a story about a neighbor who, you know, big Republican in the area, but claims he votes for him because he knows him. And he's like, well, if you vote for me because you know me and you like the policies that I'm moving, this is the heart of the Democratic Party. This is where we live. You know, stop paying attention to all the propaganda from the F channel and all of the right-wing blather that's going out over the airwaves. You know, it's who you know. It's your neighbors. And this is why I come back to this politics being participatory. This is why I come back to the idea of, you know, not just going, gee, I'd like to have a beer with my representative, but actually getting out and, like here at the Iowa, steak fry, actually getting out and having a beer with your representative, with the person who's running for county commissioner, or county supervisor, or state rep, or dog catcher for that matter. Understanding who they are, what their hopes, their dreams, their thoughts are, you know, making politics personal again. The one thing that, you know, the right has masterfully done is they've gotten us to think of you know, these politicians as you know, less than human. And when you can start, you know, picking at the other and making it, well, it's our team versus their team. Is it surprising that we don't get the things we need done? Is it surprising that we don't have health care for everyone? We don't have, you know, an end to childhood hunger? Is it a surprise that the things that we've been talking about for 30 years continually don't get done? That's where I come back to. We have got to find each other. And I'll tell you, I really like Todd. Like him a lot. I wish him well. Hope he wins re-election again. Need more Todds. Quick break. Right back.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is the best of the Rick Smith Show. We're taking a break during the holiday season, wishing you and yours the very best holiday ever. Thanks for tuning in to the Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rick Smith Show, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, one of the things I love about campaigns is fun. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, politics, while deadly serious and has consequences, and, you know, go back to my high school government teacher, you know, government decides who gets what. And sadly, the wealth class of this country, buying our as much as they can of our government, they've been getting a lot. But, you know, the fun part keeps coming up. You may remember we had a state rep candidate from Pennsylvania who did, you know, should he cut his hair or should he keep it, you know, almost down to his, you know, where. And ultimately, the cut it crowd won. And he raised a little bit of money, but had fun with it. I love having fun with politics. Engaging people, bringing people into the process. And my next guest, as soon as I saw her, I go, this person's fun. That's why I've asked Iowa State Representative Molly Donahue to sit down with us. She's got this big green shirt on that has her name on it and that she's running for state senate. I love that. I gotta get one of those. Molly, thanks for taking time for us.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
So how do I get a Molly Donahue pullover like that? I love that kind of hockey jersey kind of. I love that's great.
Honestly, this was a purchase that I made for myself just so that I had something out in the rain when I'm door knocking to make sure that I stay dry.
So what's the emblem on top? What's the significance of that?
So my name is Molly Donahue. That's a little Irish. My middle name is Aaron, so it makes it even a little more Irish.
No.
And what I have on my symbolism is all Celtic lettering and the Celtic Tree of Life. That Tree of Life it's been part of my campaign since 16. I picked that as what I wanted on my signs and all my logos because I am rooted in my community. I was born and raised in my community. I've never lived more than 2 miles away from where I am right today living. And that's why I'm working in that area and running and serving that area.
So you're basically an institution there.
It is my area.
So now you've been a state rep for how long now?
I've been a state rep for 4 years.
And now we're moving on to the Senate. Going to take on the Senate there.
Yes, taking on the Senate. Liz Mathis is running for Congress, and this district with the redistricting here in Iowa is half of hers, and then half of Rob Hogue, Senator Rob Hogue, who is retiring here shortly. So I have big shoes to fill because half Mathis, half Hogue, and I've got to make sure I do it right.
No, I you know, just in the few minutes we talked before the interview, I'm like, here's somebody who gets something done.
I try, for
sure.
Here's
somebody who comes into a room and dominates you. And that's what we need. That's what working people need. They need a champion, especially in this moment. And I think the Democrats need people who are going to focus on working people issues. And we've been talking about this all day. I mean, the reality is you know, the messaging machine out there that the right wing keeps throwing at us, it's about these fringe issues, when the reality is most people are concerned about kitchen table stuff.
Absolutely. And I am one of those working people. I, you know, have worked in the school district, part of the union, for 32 years now. Work with behaviorally disordered boys. Keeps me out of trouble. But it is about the people who are out there doing the job, putting the work in, and the fact that our wages have been stagnant for 20-plus years, but we've had record profit windfalls for corporations all across this nation.
Yeah, now education, I would assume, is probably one of your main issues, right, then? Well, as an educator? As an educator,
that is the number one reason why I ran. And as I grew and learned, there are so many other areas that also need attention. And so I have focused myself a lot on education, but then mental health, because that also kind of affects what I do for a living, working with the behaviorally disordered boys. And with that, I also am very concerned about the waterways here in Iowa. I used to be a kayaker. I still have a kayak. I hope to put it back in the water someday, but the water is nasty.
And why is that?
So much bacteria in it. And so when they're telling us that such and such beach is closed because of bacteria, or, you know, my dog got pneumonia from the creek, I'm not getting in that water if I know there's so much bacteria in it that people are getting rashes and sick. I don't want to be in there.
No kidding. Yeah. I mean, I grew up in Cleveland, mm-hmm. Home of the Clean Water and Air Act. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, you dared not go into Lake Erie because it was a murky brown soup of who knows what, and all the fish, they swam sideways with one eye looking up at the sky. I think they were dead, but you know, or they just swam funny. But you know, virtually everything in the lake was dead and dying because of how badly polluted it was, and because of smart policy and smart regulation, we cleaned it up, and now it's a thriving ecosystem. So to hear that here we are, 2022, and there are waterways in the heartland that are struggling, that are polluted. Well, that doesn't give me a warm, fuzzy feeling, Molly.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're in Iowa, and in Iowa we need farmers. Farming is the backbone of much of our state's economy.
I noticed that.
The workers might be the other half, but the farmers are important. We need them, but we have to find a way to sustainably farm and maintain our waterways so that we have not just drinking water, but places for people to recreate and want to be here and live here and play here, work here. And working is the other thing. I mean, who's going to come to Iowa to work if there's nothing else here?
Right.
So. No.
But you bring up an interesting point. The farmers, you know, and I've had a couple of conversations with people who have said, look, you know, we've got these industrial farms now. There aren't as many, you know, small family farms. We hear about them a lot. Political rhetoric, you know, aside, the small family farmers getting pushed out. The person who would care about the soil and care about the water and care about the land, they're not, or am I wrong here?
I think all farmers will tell you they care about the land, but at the end, there's, bottom line is almighty dollar. The almighty dollar. We cannot afford to farm from creek to creek and from, you know, every section of Iowa. We need to make sure we have buffers that protect our waterways. We need to make sure that there are things that farmers can do that will still maintain their profitability and keep the rest of Iowa clean. And it is possible. We just have to get people willing to do it. Family farmers are far more likely to do those things because the land that they are on is their life. I mean, it is all they have. That is their entire livelihood. And they have to make sure that that is good into the future.
Yeah, now, I grew up in a city. You know, I very urban existence. I now live in a fairly rural area, but I'm still not a country person by any stretch. But I still support farmers, and I still want them to thrive, because, well, I this radical self-interest. I like to eat.
Well, there is that. Yes.
You know, they're kind of important.
Yes, they're very important.
And we kind of want to help them. And mm-hmm. this is where, you know, smart policy can help do that. But also, yeah. and there's these moments where you help people by helping them not harm themselves
Absolutely.
Either. So we want to protect the environment, want to protect the land, want to do the mm-hmm. right things.
Absolutely.
Oh, that seems sane and rational to me, doesn't it?
It is. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I've always been a city girl myself, but I do know the importance, and I respect the farming community because it is important.
And it's tough work. You're listening mm-hmm. to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Iowa State Representative Molly Donahue. She is running for state senate here in Iowa. Her website, donahue4ai.com. We'll get links out on social media. I can take a look at her website. So, you know, we talked about education. We mm-hmm. talked about farm stuff. Healthcare. Again, that's another one of those issues I think, if I remember right, you kind of think it's important.
It is important. And, you know, I can even specify not just any healthcare, but, I mean, we do need all healthcare, but mental healthcare in Iowa is 49th in the nation. And we have some problems with that. We need to make sure that our people have the necessary programs and doctors available to them. I can take it back to the farming communities. The farmers have utilized the mental health services more than anyone else over the last few years. So we know that we need to have mental health care here.
Yeah. I would guess the isolation mm-hmm. probably would have been pretty tough getting through the pandemic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But because of mental health, you have so many other issues. I mean, it falls into the schools. It falls into workplaces. If people can't get up and go to work in the morning just because they're having a mental health crisis.
Yeah.
We have to make sure that we have the programs in place that they need to be successful and feel good and go do what they need to do. And
so what's the roadblock to getting anything done? How is it that you're 49th? I mean, it sounds like, seems like, you know, this would be something that people would agree on. We want people to get the help that they need so we don't have negative consequences across whatever the spectrum is. Seems like should be able to get something done on that front.
You would think. Our governor shut down a lot of beds. So we have something like 375 beds total in the state. So if you have a mental health crisis here in Cedar Rapids and there are no beds, they might ship you to Sioux City. But how is your family going to support you and help you get assimilate back into your life if they're 4 hours away? Sometimes they have to ship you out of state because there's not enough beds. But the governor has shut down a lot of beds, and she does not prioritize putting money into helping people.
Yeah, I often say that, you know, the policies that we see coming out of our Republican friends, the cruelty seems to be the point. Mm-hmm. That, you know, it's, you know, this stuff just seems hyper cruel and unnecessary. I mean, it just seems to me that a little bit of investment could go a long way. We used to understand that ounce of prevention, pound to cure kind of thing. There was a famous guy said that.
Could be, yes. The problem is that the party has moved so far away from people and seem to represent more corporate world versus the people. And so that social conscience just isn't there anymore.
Yeah.
And you see that in the public schools as well, not funding the public schools. That is just paramount to what Iowa used to stand for. We were number one in the country, or we fought for number one in the country with Minnesota and Wisconsin for years. And now, just in 6 years, the governor took us from 8, because we fell to 8 with Terry Branstad prior to her, at least Terry Branstad 2.0, because 1.0 Branstad was actually good for education. And then he came back and found out you could make a lot of money on tax dollars if you take it away from the public schools and put it somewhere else.
Yeah.
And Reynolds has followed through with that. And by doing that, she has starved the schools and you know, that social conscience just isn't there about taking care of the people first.
Oh, it's crazy. But I look at you and the conversation I'm having, you seem like a fairly fiery person. How do you put up with this? I mean, how do you not? And I ask a lot of legislators this. Now, I'm not the most calm person. I don't think I could do your job. I think, you know, I'd be strangling people on a daily basis. How do you not? How do you not reach across the table when you know someone is pushing legislation, is pushing something that's going to harm your constituents, going to harm your family members? How do you not just, I don't know.
Well, one, I don't really want my picture in the paper with a number underneath my face.
Okay.
So that does stop some things.
All right.
You know, I've had a lot of years of practice because what I do for a living is not easy. Not just the fact that I work with behaviorally disordered young men that are in high school.
But isn't that all boys?
I mean, it's pretty much all boys. I say
all
boys.
Behaviorally
well, that's why they said I was going to be really good at the Capitol, because there's a lot of disorderly and poorly behaved boys at the Capitol. So they said that I would have perfect experience to go help out in Des Moines. And that's, you know, when I said yes in the first place. But the thing is that you have to just look at those people and say, it's not worth it to do what you're talking about, and just keep fighting for the people. Cause I look at the people's faces every day that I work with in the schools, that I talk to in the neighborhoods, that I go to the neighborhood pub and discuss what's happening in their lives. When I'm looking at those people's faces, that's what matters. And you have to just keep putting in the work, and you can't let that divisiveness get in the way. You have to just keep trudging through.
Good on you.
Discourse is fine, but the divisiveness needs to end.
How bad has it gotten?
It's bad. I mean, it is. I mean, you look at the Republican Party, they aren't even allowed to come out of caucus until they've all agreed that they're going to vote yes. And if you don't, they will... Well, the governor will run people against you and pull you out. So she got 10 people primaried and won this past year, her own people.
Yeah. No, it doesn't surprise me. It's what we're seeing nationally, this kind of this bully politic where you better be in lockstep.
Yep.
But what do you say to the people who say, well, the Democrats do the same thing?
No, we don't. We don't.
Would have to mean that they would be organized. And I always like the Will Rogers line of, I'm not a member of an organized party, I'm a Democrat.
I'm going to tell you that, you know, 90% of what we do at the Capitol, both parties agree on. Those aren't the big deals. Those are the little things that fix a little thing here or there for a little community, and maybe it's my community or maybe it's not. Maybe it's, you know, some other community out in Western Iowa. But most of the things that we vote on are bipartisan. It's that 10%. It's always those big things, you know, whether it be public schools, whether it be abortion, whether it be health care, whether it's, you know, divisive topics in the schools. I mean, there's just so many. There are some things that are just plain old, simple. We are down the line. We're one side and the other group's on the other side. But when it comes to the bills, they won't even bring them out unless they have everybody's going to vote for them on their side. And they don't even look at ours. So.
Because they've got basically a supermajority.
They have the supermajority, and with that, we've lost all balance in Iowa. So there are a lot of people in Iowa not being served properly.
So a lot of bad things are getting through. And this is where the pitch to the voters.
This is where we are fighting.
This is where the pitch to the voters is, you know, bring some sanity back.
Yes.
Because, you know, I'm looking at Iowa, and I'm going, is Iowa the next Kansas?
I hope not. I would like to retire here, and I need things to change. So I hope not. But the thing is that, you know, if you know, we get some common sense back into the Capitol, you know, we probably aren't going to win the Senate or the House this year, but we can get some seats back. We can make it harder for them. And we've done a great job stopping some nasty things, but we had, you know, those 10 people over there that got run out by her own party.
Yeah, the message is
there. We did not agree politically, but they were decent people. And they're the reason why some of those things, they helped us prevent some of those things from happening.
Yeah, the decent people always seem to get run out.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember a time when there were Republicans who supported labor. Mm-hmm. I remember when there were Republicans who supported infrastructure. I remember when they supported, you know, helping people in their communities. Now it just seems all to be about enriching the wealthy and you know, giving more power to corporations.
Listen, I was born and raised into a household of Republicans, and they were for labor. So, and were labor. So, you know, it's one of those things that, yes, things have changed a lot, and it's unfortunate because you should never take the people out of politics. They are the reason for it.
Yep.
So that's, you know, people are first. And excellent. And I say it, I've said that since the beginning of time of my campaigning, is putting people first.
There you go. But I love the I love the sweater. I love the shirt. I got to get one. Molly Donahue, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Good
Thank
stuff.
You.
The website, donahue4aia.org. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at it. It'll be that easy, I promise. I'll get that one right, the important part right. Going to take a quick break right back here from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show. We will be returning on January 3rd.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I'm Rick Smith.
And this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1945. That was the day that Paul Robeson received the Spingarn Medal from the NAACP. The award was given annually to the African-American with the highest achievement. Robeson certainly fit that criteria. He was born in Princeton, New Jersey. He attended Rutgers University, where he was an athletic standout and valedictorian. He earned his law degree from Columbia. He was a successful singer, as well as stage and film actor. He was also an internationally recognized star, with singing engagements all around the world. Robeson strongly supported labor and working people. He was also an outspoken critic of U.S. colonialism. His stand for social justice made him a target of Senator Joe McCarthy during the hysteria of the Cold War Red Scare. Because of his alleged communist ties, in 1950, Robeson's passport was revoked. It took him 8 years to get it reissued. During that time, he could not travel abroad to perform. The International Union of Mine, Mill, and Smelter Workers invited Robeson to sing at their Canadian convention in 1952. Since he could not travel, he sang over the telephone. The union then organized a concert on the Washington State Canadian border. Standing on a flatbed truck parked on the U.S. side of the border, Robeson gave a 45-minute performance to a crowd of 40,000 people. He started the concert by saying, quote, "I stand here today under great stress because I dare, as do you, all of you, to fight for peace and for a decent life for all men, women, and children." Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
What does he care if the world's got troubles? What does he care if the land ain't free?
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
This is the best of the Rick Smith Show.
So during the break, I was checking out an email that said that Americans don't really care about democracy. Not a priority. Not really all that much on their minds. And in fact, they're saying there's an unprecedented number of people who do not believe the results of the ballot box. You know, they tend to skew to the far right, of course. Those are the folks who say that Joe Biden's illegitimate and he's never going to be my president kind of stuff. And look, I understand that. I get it. I get that the crazy on the right, off the fringe, off the beaten path. But do you really care about democracy? I'll tell you, the people that we've been talking to, they certainly do. And here to share some thoughts as we wrap up our first day here in Cedar Rapids, the professor, the producer, my good friend Brett Pransky. Brett, how are you, man?
Doing well. Doing real well.
So you buy this? You think that people are through with democracy? You think the idea that democracy is over?
No, not really. I think what we're seeing here is that there is a subset of the population that, you know, that probably thinks that democracy isn't as great as it should be, or they might, you know, fight against it or whatever. But I think what we're really seeing is a very small number of people who happen to be really, really, really loud about it.
No, the other premise that they made, and it's something that I agree with, that people are concerned about the economy and people are concerned about how they're going to put food on the table. Democracy may be a luxury in these folks' minds, but I think ultimately when it comes down to it, I still think the American people, I still believe, and I guess this puts me in that believe crowd, I still believe democracy is important.
Oh, of course it is. I mean, none of the other aspects of American greatness exists without it.
And the reason I bring this up and the reason I ask about it, because we talk about inflation, we talked about the economy, we talk about education, we talk about infrastructure, reshoring manufacturing, strong unions, we talk about all this stuff, and it all comes back to democracy.
Exactly. I mean, without democracy, without our rule by the majority system that we have in place, we don't get to create any of these other things. So I think that, for those who may shout really loud that, yo, democracy is over, or I'm not a fan of it, I just think this is, a few very loud and mysteriously well-funded voices.
Mysteriously well-funded. That seems probably to be more apt. Because look, at the end of the day, this is how we solve all of our problems. Elections matter. People coming together matters. So I wanted to get your thoughts on the event, the steak fry. I'll tell you my thought.
We should be doing this in every community. This was a fabulous event.
It really was. I mean, well, first of all, you take the venue. It's the local Union Hall, you know, a place where historically people have always come together, where community events have been held. And, you know, we need to do more of this kind of thing. But also the people that we've been speaking to all day, we've been speaking to candidates of all shapes and sizes from all different areas, from all different offices, and people seeking all kinds of different offices, many of them, you know, fairly local in nature. And while, you know, while it's nice to speak to a senator, it's nice to speak to a congressman, it's nice to speak to people who are, you know, who are polished and are in the game of politics at a very high level, I really enjoy speaking to people who are doing this at the local level, the people who can talk to us about issues and what they care about. And they're also probably the person you bump into at your kid's soccer game.
Yeah. Now, again, I come back to this, and you hit on it a second ago, the Union Hall being, you know, the center of the community. And this is something I talk about quite often. In order for us to re-engage with working people, I think the Union Halls are the place, you know, where, you know, historically we've had weddings and, you know, gatherings and, you know, all kinds of events. That needs to happen again. And in this place, this is what that is. And this is why I think Iowa, for me, has been so cool, is that it's a lot of the things that we talk about, you know, actually in the works.
Right. And, you know, when you think about it, the Labor Hall is the center of many things in the community. It's not just a gathering place where people can come together, you know, go to events and functions and things like that. But many times the people who inhabit that hall, who do those jobs, are the backbone of the community. Many times, you know, the good, solid paying, you know, union jobs with good benefits are the jobs in the community that prop up all the other jobs. Because even the people who don't, you know, who aren't in the union, who aren't working union jobs, chances are their employers have to, you know, compete with union labor and have to, you know, treat their employees better because of, you know, of the union labor in town. And so that kind of makes the Union Hall, you know, kind of a backbone of the community.
Yeah. Now tomorrow on the program, we're going to be heading over, while still here in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, over to the Ingredion picket line. Those workers have been on strike, I think, something like 75, 76 days. These are folks who, you know, again, you know, fighting for better wages, hours, conditions, opportunities. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, so am I. I mean, the company there has, you know, has really done some dirty, underhanded things from what I'm told. I heard they cut off you know, healthcare on the first day of the strike and just did some things that you don't really see in other places, and some stuff that's just really, you know, goes beyond, you know, the products of negotiation, kind of back and forth you would get in a situation like this, and just borders on the mean and the cruel.
It is exactly what they do. And again, I'm looking forward to tomorrow from the picket line there at Ingredion. I want to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Tell us what you think. Also, make sure, you know, October 22nd, if you're in Milwaukee, I'll make sure you hit us up for those tickets to see the Greg Palast movie, Vigilante, Georgia's Vote Suppression Hitman. Looking forward to that. Look, got a bunch of response already. People who are coming out going to say hello and want to see the movie. So make sure you email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you get yours, you'll find ours. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next
time. You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. We will be returning on January 3rd.
You've been listening to the Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@therickssmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.